This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another unconventional episode of the Doxcast. I am your co-host, Josh Trumbo, and with me, as always, is the... Oh, what should we give you today, Rich? The online Rich Early, the internet only Rich Early. One of those things, somewhere in there. Rich Early, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
It's a pandemic, and I'm watching Twins baseball, so.
Not watching Marlins baseball, though.
No, definitely not watching Marlins baseball, no.
Because it's a pandemic, and they're all sick.
Yeah, oh my God. Apparently, though, no other positive test came in to the MLB this morning, so it looks like it is contained to them. Although, I was just reading an article that, you know, they're not going to play until at least Monday of next week, and that's only if they get, I think it's at least one day with no positives on the whole team. And so, like, if they're able to play starting next Monday, they will have 56 days to play 57 games. I mean, it's just not going to happen, right? So, it's definitely an interesting situation.
It might make baseball more interesting, though. To maybe they could play two games simultaneously. Right, like
I think you're just going to end up with a season where you're going to have at least one team that just doesn't play all the games on its schedule, and it's just, you know, I mean, look, nothing about 2020 is going to be normal. So
it's a baseball season where everything's made up and the points don't matter.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're doing a podcast on baseball tonight.
Apparently. Do we have some super nerd that was a shortstop or something?
Yeah.
Brandon Ross.
Ooh. True.
Oh, if only we had Brandon Ross. Who is that mysterious voice that's talking?
Oh.
No, you're good, man. Well, I mean, the topic tonight, every year after the San Diego Comic-Con, we like to get the crew together and do a review, a look back at the San Diego Comic-Con. But, you know, this year, obviously, the convention was canceled in person. Normally, they'd have, you know, 100,000 people and more wanting to get in that can't. And, you know, it's interesting because they have been so opposed to live streaming panels and things like that, even though, you know, theoretically, it's been in such high demand, you know, for that sort of thing. But this year, they tried it. They went to a virtual format. They had 700 vendors in a big vendor room. I didn't actually visit the vendor room. I was going to ask one of you guys if you did knew how they did that. But and then they did, you know, streaming panels on, I mean, about a dozen different platforms. So anyway, we've brought in Eric Bradshaw, comic book superstar.
Hello.
Hello, Eric. and longtime hardcore Doxcaster Brad Meixner.
That's me.
And yeah, we're going to talk some San Diego Comic-Con. Josh pointed out earlier that Josh and I are both lazy, so we wanted to bring you guys in to, you know, to do most of the talking.
That's right. That's legwork. That's exactly why we bring in guests, so you guys can do all the research and the talking and stuff, and Rich and I can just sit around and every so often throw in a pithy little comment or something. So
drinking our whiskey and taking credit for everything.
That's right.
Yeah, Brad, you know, you guys were chatting before the show. You know, and I'm always welcome. I don't need anybody to always to have a positive opinion on everything, but like, give us a little bit of a, you know, what does your diving tell you so far? You know, like, what can you give us a little taste of what was at the convention in general, what was kind of hot, and then we'll kind of go around and talk about things that caught our attention and things like that. Right.
I mean, it basically, to me, felt like the media aspect of it, movies and television, were the big things getting promoted, which, you know, is kind of the way that the Comic-Con always has gone. But it's also odd to me that it's, you know, movies they're trying to promote that they know are already pushed back well into 2021. Stuff that could have come out in 2020, you know, come out this year, but it's probably getting moved around again. And I guess for me, the one that caught me the most off guard that I'm the most pleasantly pleased about is animated Star Trek. I can't tell you why.
It's just
like thing that I, you know, I don't keep my ear to the ground for Trek show news. And this just popped up out of nowhere. And I'm like, well, that's just, it's cute. You know, it's something I would probably enjoy watching, except I will not support CBS All Access because I already have 8,000 other streaming services. So
8,001. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair broad stroke. Eric, how about you? What's your take on the con in the broader sense?
In the broader sense, one of the things that was interesting to me is, you know, how many people always want to get into this thing, and then having it for free, the amount of turnout was kind of weird. It's kind of lower than I thought. But there was, as far as like comics go, it was a lot of kind of like non stories essentially. There was some cool announcements from some publishers like IDW, stuff like that. But otherwise, a lot of the panels, like there's a lot of books announced beforehand, you know, like the Rorschach book, stuff like that. And then there's stuff that are probably going to get held on to until, like, probably DC Fandom will probably have some more stuff.
What is DC Fandom? I don't even know what DC Fandom is.
DC Fandom is basically DC's own streaming con that's coming up. So they're probably going to be holding on to, I mean, that's probably why they were holding on to stuff for that. I know Scott Snyder said that he's going to be showing your first look at the Snyder Cut stuff at DC Fandom. Zack Snyder, not Scott Snyder. But then there's a Scott Snyder spotlight panel.
I know why Scott Snyder's on your mind. I'm not telling anybody else, but I know why he's on your mind.
No, there was a Scott Snyder spotlight panel where he talked about stuff. I guess he did announce that American Vampire's coming back through DC Black Label. Him and Albuquerque, which is the first stuff they've done since, I think, 2016 involving it.
So was Marvel there at all and any presence?
No. They had some comics discussion panels. There was an X-Men, like Ten of Swords.
I didn't watch it.
Yeah, with Howard and Jerry Duggan.
Well, I think Hickman was
and they
there
just kind of talked about that stuff. I mean, it was kind of interesting. Jerry Duggan said that they were going to be kind of guesting on each other's books, like co-writing, like kind of swapping books, but co-writing with the main writer throughout the event, which might be interesting. But otherwise, I think just going to save their stuff till whatever, if Disney does a D23 at home, I guess.
Also, isn't Jerry Duggan off Marauders in October too? Anyway, so
I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that he's not in the solicits for New Mutants. Ooh. In the October issues. So, Josh, how about yourself? Yeah. Did you follow the con or just kind of catch up on it? As a more casual fan of, you know, things like comics, but certainly a movie and TV fan, I mean, what did you think of how they did this year? And was it something you were excited about or on your radar?
You know, it's weird. I appreciate that they did a virtual version of it rather than just not doing anything. You know, they put some effort into it and tried to get some stuff out there. There wasn't really anything, at least that I was aware of, that really caught my attention, you know, last weekend came and went, and I didn't tune in for any of the live panels or anything. And I went to tonight finally before I tried to do some research. You know, I'm not that lazy. I put in the smallest amount of effort, and you know, just tried to look up, you know, just what was the big news. And there were like the site that I looked up or that I went to came up in my Google search had like five things listed, and none of them really stood out. And only then did I realize, oh, you know, usually around this time, there's a ton of people posting stuff on Facebook. There's some big trailer that goes through, you know, there's some huge news, something gets leaked, you know, there's always something. And just realizing now how there wasn't. And I don't know, it's just maybe the things that they put out there this year, maybe there are people who are really, really excited about some of those things. I mean, hey, you know, I think Adventure Time's great, but I have no idea what this Obsidian special is or why I should be, why that's under the biggest news of Comic-Con.
Right. And normally there would be an Adventure Time panel at Comic-Con, mm-hmm. but it would be one of, you know, infinite panels that the Adventure Time fans went to, and that would be it, not like a featured news story. Brad, I mean, I wonder, you know, as you know, I mean, I've run a comic shop for 27 years, you know, like
that's a long like, time.
Thank you. But the what I was going to say, though, is that I feel like I have a good sense of when something has energy and momentum and when it doesn't. And it's just like, to me, for some reason, this San Diego Comic-Con at home just never had any energy or momentum. And I, you know, I don't know if it's fatigue. I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm trampling over your answer, but like, it just was never exciting. I mean, even not going to real San Diego, I always found it exciting to look forward to. You know what I mean? It's just,
yeah.
It's just this was just there. Do you think it was a marketing fail, or do you think there is just like there isn't really a home for this the replication of what the Comic-Con is? You know, physically, is this a case where virtual just doesn't really work, or something? Or I don't know.
I think virtual does work. They just missed the boat because the lockdowns lasted so long. Like, I'll reference Josh Gad and all the times where he's done the charity. Like, I'm getting the crew of this film together, you know, the cast of this film together to talk about it. Mm. You know, he's done Lord of the Rings, Ghostbusters. And then I don't remember which company organized it, but for the 10th anniversary of Scott Pilgrim, they got the entire, you know, mm-hmm. I'd say 90% of the crew together, and they did something online. So it's like people have figured out how to do these, and they've been doing them successfully in the previous, you know, 2 to 3 months. And then San Diego rolls around and just wants us to be excited because it's San Diego. And I don't feel that they sure. went above and beyond.
So typically a lot of those things might've been under the umbrella of San Diego, but now people don't need that umbrella, and in fact kind of scooped them, basically, is what you're thinking.
Yeah, or, you know, the nerds got bored themselves. They're like, I don't need to wait. So they put, because I know all the ones that Josh Gad put together for his, I think it was his personal channel. You know, they each had a charity, you know, like a food bank or something, that they made sure money that was being donated went to. Whereas, and now San Diego is just like, watch us because we're news, so we can tell you about movies that might come out, but you know, like, I'll be honest, other than the animated Star Trek, there wasn't a thing that I've seen announced. There could be something I'm missing, but there's not a thing that I've seen announced that I didn't already know about.
Yep.
And so I guess maybe that's what San Diego's missing, is that, like, blockbuster, like, halfway through a panel reveal, you know, like when Taika Waititi brought up.
Sorry.
James
special
Fox.
bonus dogs.
You know, like we've seen Marshall Ali on stage, and we know he's going to be Blade, or that was a cool reveal. Whereas, like, okay, we got a second trailer to Bill and Ted, and it's so it's like, right. You know, I knew that was coming. It's cool. Mm-hmm. I'm excited about it, but they don't have that wow unique thing that is only San Diego Comic-Con. I could be wrong. Maybe there's something I'm forgetting, but it doesn't feel like they had the unique item that only San Diego usually had for like that week until the companies broke down and finally put the trailer up online or whatever.
I totally agree.
Go ahead.
I mean, it speaks to my thing I said earlier about how it was a bunch of non-stories. It was just a bunch. It was a lot of, here's a thing, but it's all stuff we kind of know already. I don't know if my thought on it is like Brad had said with the fact that people have been doing these streams that have been catching a lot of people's attention, like the Josh Gad stuff combined with just the general, like all the scheduling I'm sure is off for all of these different media things. So they don't really have stuff prepared and ready because like fall TV season's going to be a little weird. Like, you know, the movies aren't coming out. And then just the all those mixed together and the fact of it's just, it's a, yeah, it's just, that's just it. It's, nothing's working out timeline wise. So there's just nothing really to report. No comics, you know, comics got pushed back. Movies, TV, everything got screwed up. So it's like they just kind of did what they had, I guess, or were comfortable putting out.
Not only pushed back and screwed up, but still just gigantic unknowns. We don't yeah. know. Fine, you know, there's a release date for Black Widow in November. Who the hell knows if that's actually going to happen, right? Like,
no, yeah, it's placeholder.
So complicated. Josh, you know, yeah. The other thing is, you know, you are yourself a performer, and earlier this summer I watched you or late May on Memorial Day weekend I watched you perform with your partner Paul Tebben over Zoom, and there's a big difference between that energy enthusiasm in the room with people in it versus the utter lack of feedback you're getting while you're on that Zoom, right? I'm wondering what the energy is just not something you can replicate in the same way, no matter what you announced, right?
Yeah. So, I'll try not to go on for too long here, but, just a couple of things from my perspective, talking about that. It was a very different thing for us. It was still a lot of fun. I mean, definitely, like you said, the energy in the room there, you don't have that. You don't have that audience feedback. But because of that, it was also very laid back. And usually when we perform, you know, we kind of have we have these bits that we do, and some of the things require very specific timing. And so for me to perform like that and just, you know, live stream it out onto the internet, It was actually really, really fun, because you still get some feedback watching the chat and stuff, and so you know when people are watching, and when you see there's like 100 people, it's like we probably wouldn't get 100 people in a room, but we'll get 100 people on the internet. So from my perspective, there are pros and cons to that whole thing, but that's, you know, an extremely good point is, you know, and going to what Brad was saying there too. So I watched real quick here the trailer for New Mutants, and I know there was a whole panel that led up to that, or not the trailer, but that whole first scene. And after that scene finished, there was a little bit where they all kind of went, "Yeah, wow, that was great," and it just, you know, that felt very forced. It felt very not genuine, like.
Yeah, you can't replicate Hall H.
Yeah, but by the same token, though, I've seen some of those things like Brad was talking about, and I remember, you know, the community read through and watching them get together and read that, and just how much fun they were having. Like, that's a group that, and obviously it's a bit different of a scenario and stuff. They, you know, they were on a TV show for 6 seasons, and to be away from it and then to come back to it, and there's new energy revitalized from it being on Netflix and stuff. But that was so much fun to watch because they were all having so much fun with it. And it was, you know, just reading the script for an episode, you know, a very good episode, but it was nothing new or anything. But it's still, it was so genuine and so just fun, not to overuse the word. And I feel like, and maybe this is unfair, but I kind of feel like after the announcement was made that there was no in-person San Diego Comic-Con this year, it was all going to be virtual, they're going to put panels and things, you know, it just doesn't feel like there was any real effort put in to create something that would really have that wow factor or really bring people into it and enjoy it.
Well, my last kick to you on that is, you know, we tried to replicate tabletop night, game day / tabletop night, you know, we had a little bit of success. It may have behooved us to stick with it and try to push. I totally agree, you know, admit that and everything, but it was pretty clear right away that there are some experiences that don't really make sense to try to translate over to virtual. So maybe, you know, some of the things you're talking about, you know, the community read through, and I don't know any of Josh Gad's stuff, but I get the idea, you know, those are new ideas, you know, those are a different way to present something that you would have gotten. So maybe that's part of what makes them unique instead of just trying to be a literal translation of what the physical would have been like. I don't know.
Yeah. I wonder if this was anything but San Diego stand-in, if that would have mattered. Like, if it was just an original digital convention, if it would have been, I don't know, quote unquote, cooler than if it was just like billed as San Diego Comic-Con, where you expect all this big spectacle to come from.
Well, I would think though that if someone was creating a virtual online, you know, specific convention, like that was the whole point of it, that there would be a lot of effort put into having, you know, some really interesting panels, you know, since there's, you know, really no gatekeeping. Like San Diego Comic-Con, not everybody can go there, you know, whether it's money or distance or whatever. When you put it online, yeah, there can still be some limiting factors. I mean, they may still have a badge system or something like that. But I and again, like Brad, I may have missed something. I didn't go through and watch all the panels. I haven't seen all of the news and all of the trailers and whatever else was put out there. But just looking at a list of the things that were there and the few things I did watch, it was just like, huh, okay. Instead of, but, oh, that's neat that they put this together.
Yeah, it was totally a missed opportunity to create something special that they could have done. I don't know if it was just a time constraint, I guess, but I don't know.
I'm wondering if they couldn't figure out what it was. Is what it feels like to me. They knew they wanted to do this. Probably if there are a lot of older people who've run San Diego Comic-Con for a long time, they may not be, you know, as savvy to make this pivot or something, or like there just weren't, this is not a criticism of the people who were there, but there weren't enough minds there to come up with a relevant enough replacement, you know, is what I'm wondering. I would be curious, you know, was there a costume contest and what kind of views did that get? And, you know, and was there a cosplay stream going on that you could post into or something? You know, Brad, I mean, before we started, you were looking up on YouTube, which is one of the platforms they use, some of the numbers. Do you remember you know, some of the views of things that we were seeing.
I had myself muted. I'm sorry. I've ruined everything.
No, you're good.
Looks like IGN had most of what got covered. Zack Snyder reveals the Snyder Cut, 97,000 views after 3 days.
Oh.
You know, there's a couple Vikings season 6, 830,000 views after 4 days.
Holy crap. Wow. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah. You know, and then the Constantine 15th anniversary reunion got 121,000 views over 2 days. So, there, I mean, there's we're out there, but sometimes I wonder just like, you know, how much can you trust the numbers on 24-hour trailer, you know, lifespan? It's like how many times do people just rewatch it to try and pick out minutia? Because, you know, they actually ran a boys panel for season 2, lasted about an hour, it looks like, and that got 51,000 views over 5 days. So I don't know if people were just clicking through things, you know, opening up a stream, clicking through it quickly to see if they could find what they wanted, and then going to something else, and that counts as a view.
I mean, that's interesting with Vikings being 10 times anything else. I mean, maybe that speaks to that reached a non-just nerd audience only sort of thing, whereas everything else was pretty much a nerd audience that you listed, you know?
Well, it also is the shortest one. It's 2 minutes, 9 seconds. It's a just
a so it's a trailer.
Yeah, it's a trailer. But then, you know, Henry Cavill in the black suit was the same thing. It was 3 minutes, 27 seconds. But yeah, it's
sure. And then we got 90-some thousand. Yeah.
So,
well, that's because I got news for Zack Snyder. No one actually cares. Sorry. Yes, Eric.
You knew I was gonna say something.
Yes, Eric.
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, if only for the fact of, I just want to see Darkseid, man.
Fair enough, but like. Really, though, like, I just watched Justice League again, the second time I ever watched it. There is no footage that exists right now that can make that movie good. Like, it doesn't exist. I challenge anyone to use any uncut footage and make that movie good, because it's terrible. Okay, anyway.
I think they said that he had filmed, like, 75% of his script or something.
Hmm. Well, I think that was good, because I don't even want to see the other all right, okay, I'm done. I'm totally done. So,
my question is...
With the trailer thing Brad brought up with Vikings, I don't know how much of that was San Diego and how much of that was just a new Vikings trailer.
Sure. Yeah, that's... I mean, I get that, but you'd think some of these other things should have done better if it's the newness that people cared about.
Well, how did the New Mutants panel do? Because they showed the opening scene to the movie and things like that, right? I mean,
yep. Mm-hmm. It was just a general. I mean, you know, your general movie panel, I guess. And then, yeah, the tail end, the last 5 minutes or whatever, because they show the first few minutes of the movie and then segue into a trailer. So I don't know how many people are sitting through the whole thing or how many are going right to that last 5 minutes. Because I don't think you have to watch a certain amount of a YouTube video for views to count, I think. So, I don't know.
Ten minutes, I think, right? Yeah. So.
Yeah. And that trailer is like about 5 minutes at the end. So it could be viewed by more people, but.
If somebody could find that and find the views, I'd be curious. Now, before we started, too, I was bemoaning the fact that I just wanted some of the, you know, I was saying, well, when are they just going to give up, you know, and release some of this stuff in some digital or, you know, whether it's like this, you know, we saw stuff right away in like April where like Invisible Man and Inside Out, Outward. What was the new Disney one? Onward, there we go. And it was, you know, and I think they still are, they're like $19.99 to rent instead of the like $3.99 to rent or the like 20 to buy but frozen to rent for 2 weeks, you know, all that kind of stuff, right? So still like $20 to rent. So I mean, but Eric, you had a lot of insight into that about and about what's going on, you know, why that's not happening.
Eric,
did he
die? He's gone away. He's gone to a better place.
Oh, I was looking something up.
no, you're good. I was trying
looking
to
up the numbers
up.
For that New Mutants panel.
Cool.
I'm sorry. What was the question? Because I missed it.
Oh, I was setting you up to talk about why they don't just release. You know, go ahead and get a digital schedule set up for some of these movies. Because I mean, at some point, you know, even like Tenet, you know. I mean, there's so much money into that movie. How long is the studio really willing to hold, you know, that $200 million investment or whatever, you know, and how are they going to try to salvage it, right? So, but you were talking about why they can't do that with some of these movies.
Yeah. So in the contracts of a lot of movies, it is written in that they have to debut in theaters first. So a lot of these New Mutants is an example of that. It's in the contract that it has to debut in a theater first before it can go video on demand. So I'm sure that's a hang up for a lot of things. I did hear, though, that there was a screening of Tenet, but it was only for IMAX employees.
Hmm. Did you get New Mutants numbers?
Yes. So the panel itself, which was only 29 and a half minutes, with the last five basically being the trailer, that had 200,000. But the movie clips trailers page, and I forget the other one, one had 400,000 and one had like 600 something thousand, but that was just the trailer, not the panel.
So this ties into Brad. Like, if I send Brad a long text or a message, he just always gives me TLDR as the response. I mean, is that part of this? Yeah,
is Rich this part? Is that, novels.
Yeah, is that part of novels. This, Brad? Is that like the culture just wants the thing they can digest in 2 minutes, and they'll click on that a lot. But if they see 30 minutes, they're not going to click on it.
Instant gratification.
Yeah. Let me watch the trailer and then let me make the decision if I want to invest time into your panel. You know, do I care to hear these kids talk about this movie? Yeah, we filmed this movie in 1970 and we're finally going to get to release it. You know, like, dear God, I feel bad for these actors. They're just like every year they get ramped up to like, we're going to release the film. You're going to have to do press on it. And they're like, eh, we're not releasing it.
Yeah, they go through reshoots. Then they have to deal with the Disney buyout and then pandemic. They can't catch a break.
And then didn't they announce that they're just going to go with the original shot film and not use reshoots anyways?
Yep, they never did reshoots, which Josh Boone was happy about because the reshoots were studio mandated.
You know, I think that there's an interesting angle here that maybe we haven't really considered, and that's just because it's available doesn't mean people care. Like, so the people that would go to San Diego Comic-Con, maybe that's, you know, the 200,000 people that watched the full video are the people who would go or would love to go but could never make it. And so just because there's a 30-minute panel about a New Mutants movie, that doesn't suddenly mean that, like, I will attend it. You know, I don't want to watch these guys talk about the movie. I just want to see the trailer or the scene or whatever.
And that's what the news stories are always are too online. You read about the panel to get to the description of the trailer. You'd skim through and then description of trailer if they didn't release it. And that's part of it too, is, you know, no news grabbing things.
Mm-hmm. And I think,
well, you know, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that's interesting, and maybe, you know, that will help with next year, assuming next year can be in person, hopefully, fingers crossed, God willing, you know, that could be some real firepower in their court, you know, if the people who run SDCC and, you know, the people doing the panels and stuff don't want to put out, you know, a streaming version, then they can go back and say, well, why should we do that? Here are the numbers. You know, people didn't tune in and didn't care. So we're going to keep it exclusive here so that it's something special for the people who do actually attend, you know?
Part of that's extenuating circumstances, though, too, with, like we were saying, is this really a good example because of the fact that it is what it is right now, and the pandemic's affecting it. Does this have anything to do with it? Because there is no headlines. And if anything, San Diego is headlines. I mean, I went on, I think, CBR on Saturday, which is usually, like, the biggest news day for Comic-Con. And I scrolled through and didn't see anything. And then I had to go through again. Like, I had to have missed something. There'd have been some big thing there, but it was all, you know, stuff I had heard about and then some smaller little comic tidbits.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do know that coming up this next month, Gen Con is, you know, not in person. There's one specific event that I'm super excited to go to. I'm going to tune in live and I'm going to, you know, be a part of the Arkham Horror LCG design a card thing. So it's like,
that's cool.
You know, I think it's, I don't know. It yeah.
That's incentive to watch the panel though, too. You know what I mean?
Well, but that's just it, is they created a cool panel. Like, they leaned into it, right? Because the past several years at Gen Con, the Fantasy Flight team, they do all sorts of events. And there's been an Arkham one, and the, you know, at least a couple of them have been like, let's take advantage of the fact that we have a, you know, a large crowd, a huge event, and design something specifically for large groups. And so they had, you know, these really cool scenarios and stuff they created. And so this year when Gen Con made the decision to axe that, I don't know, maybe they were planning to do something like this in person there and they just said, okay, well, we can just do it online. But, you know, what if they were planning some other big event, some large multiplayer event, and then when the news came out, they didn't just go, oh, well, we can't really do this one online, so let's just not do anything. Or, you know, let's just announce a product that everybody already knows is coming. They pivoted and went towards something that a lot of players, I think, are really excited about.
And it just... Leave it to game dudes to come up with an interesting way to do this that's interactive.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about the structure of the con, the ramifications, the, you know, energy level, the viewership and everything. So now I'm going to put us on the spot. I want everybody, you got to pick something out that you did like at the con, a specific panel, something. And Josh, I don't care if you have to browse through IGN right now to try to find it. You can go last, but I don't want the New Mutants panel. I want something unique, you know, like Eric, I'm going to go to you first. Cause I have a feeling out of everybody here, you're the one that most likely, has deep dived enough stuff that you can give me something, you know, what connected with you? What was a cool thing that you ran into, at the con, have I stalled long enough for you?
Yeah, no, I got a couple things. One of the cool things for me was IDW announced that they are that Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips are going to do a new story in the Richard Starks Parker line to pay tribute to Darwin Cook.
Who did those amazing.
Those Parker adaptations. That's
really cool to be. I really enjoyed those. So seeing that and the bonus of it just being a, you know, a tribute to Darwin Cook is awesome. And the other one was...
I will buy that. I'm buying... Brad's buying that. I'm buying it. John Stock is going to buy that. I don't know if anybody... So I got three sold already. Brad and I don't exactly make the store any money, though, so there's that.
The other one is there's... they did some sneak peeks at the Dune comics that are coming out. They did some art previews for the Dune graphic novel adaptation, and then also displayed some art that was released earlier and talked a little bit about the prequel comic to Dune, like itself, called House of Atreides, which also kind of looks cool. But yeah, perfect. those were two that really stuck out to me.
All right, Bradley, you're on the spot.
Well, I started out by talking about it, but I mean, the Star Trek Lower Deck, I just came out of nowhere, tickled my fancy. The fact that they're going to bring, you know, a little bit more humor to a very serious franchise, have some fun with it, you know, because this will be the first animated series we've had since the mid 70s, right?
Yep.
Yes.
They've never tried doing another Trek animated since. And I don't know why. Like I said, I don't. Me and CBS All Access probably aren't going to get along, but who knows? I might track it down, steal Rich's password or something. And, you know.
Get the trial subscription and then binge it all and then cancel it.
Rich, tell me when it's done and then I can do that quick.
Are there are there two Star Trek animated series? Because there's going to be one on Nickelodeon.
Yeah, yes, it's not the Nickelodeon one. This is the CBS All Access one.
Okay.
Lower Decks is essentially, like Brad was saying, you know, it's essentially, for all intents and purposes, it seems to be humor. I'm sure they're playing up the humor a lot for the trailer. One of the things in there is that we all know Star Trek, you know, is always about first contact. But then they have a thing called second contact, and second contact is when the peons have to go and do like all the paperwork and the boring stuff after the, you know, the captain and the command crew got to have all the fun. So
nice.
It's almost
the clip I watched was real high energy, and I wasn't expecting it to be that kind of PG-13 range, kind of, because the clip I watched, the girl talking about her like Romulan whiskey and getting drunk and then accidentally cutting our main character's leg with a bat left.
Bradley?
Oh, like, I think, to me, the stuff that I've seen about it, it's like the Trek community finally leaned into the fact that, like, Galaxy Quest was an homage to them, and they're just like, you know, there's got to be just ridiculous, dumb things that happen within the Federation. It's like, why does everything need to be like these high-end, high-class first contact stories? It's like, you know, at some point the toilets are going back up. It's got to be a pain. So why not lean into it and have fun?
I'm excited for the Ferengis to show up.
All right, Josh, what do you got? You've had lots of time now.
I have. You know what? I had something at the beginning, too, and I almost requested to go first just so that no one else stole it, but fortunately no one did. They did show off a trailer for Lovecraft Country.
Yes.
Which looks fascinating. I think it's going to be on HBO, though, and I don't have that, so that's a sad point. But it looks really good, and you guys, I mean, obviously I just talked about Arkham, so you know how much I'm into, like, the Lovecraft stuff like that, so...
My dog Dipper would like to comment as well. So
he'll probably have more insight than I do.
Right now, he's running around in a circle, wanting his brother to play with him, and that's not happening. So he's going to be a very sad dog in a second here.
Poor boy.
Mm-hmm. All right, Lovecraft Country. Yeah, and that's an HBO Max. Is that another? Oh no, it's
HBO proper. I think.
Right, but it's yeah. What's his name? It's not well, Key, but the other
yeah,
one.
Yeah, Jordan Peele is producing it. I think.
Yeah.
Sure.
Takes place in the 50s, I think.
Yeah.
During Jim Crow.
Yeah, no, it it looks intriguing. I'll have to find some way to finagle a subscription or something. Lean on somebody.
Something that they, I think, announced today that I really think they should have announced at the panel is they're doing a Batman Death in the Family animated movie. And you actually get to, it's like a choose-your-own-adventure where you actually get to pick if Robin dies or not at the end.
Oh, interesting.
Really?
Yeah, so you get to kind of choose your ending.
Huh.
But that was, like, they revealed that, like, today, I think. I don't think it was even at Comic-Con. I was like, that would have been perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things. The one panel, I haven't watched it yet, but the panel I'd like to watch, there's a Nathan Fillion panel.
Yeah.
And I think Joss Whedon showed up. And that's sort of interesting, given all the controversy swirling around Whedon right now. So I'd really like to watch that panel and see what their relationship was like on the panel and see what they talked about. So that's still on my radar to get watched. The most obvious one for me as a fan and business owner, and this is you guys kind of deeper dive than I did, but was the there was a Mark Rosewater Magic the Gathering panel, and he introduced a new type of product that they're adding to the Magic line. And I'm really excited about that product from two perspectives. It's a really nice product both for a consumer and a retailer. Like it just seems like a really sweet spot where they're going to be really cool cards and a chance to get older cards randomly out of packs and things like that. But also from a retail perspective, like I think there's enough value that I don't expect the price to go bananas high and hurt the consumer, but I also don't expect it to like crash the way a lot of products do to where a store can barely, you know, operate off of those sales. No comment. I mean, just saying like, so I was excited about that. That was kind of a cool announcement. So, oh, and interestingly enough, this is nothing to do with San Diego Comic-Con, essentially, but Magic Wizards has actually finally launched a... It's one of the things retailers complain about is we find out stuff the exact same time that customers do. And part of that makes sense because it's a collectible market, right? And so if you gave retailers information head starts, that is dangerous because you would get into who's got information about, you know, this card's being reprinted and this one isn't. There's already concern inside the marketplace about, you know, effectively insider trading like that. So, I mean, I understand a lot of the problem, you know, that they face, but they've set up a new text alert system. So at the very least, either right before or as an announcement is made, everybody now gets a text immediately. Like I've been for a year, I've been in this situation, like, customers will hit me up and want to order something that I've never even heard of yet, you know, and it got announced in a panel an hour earlier, right? Or in a drop on a Monday morning. And they're like, how do you not know about this? I'm walking to work. I have no idea what you're talking about. So.
The interesting thing about that Joss Whedon appearance as well, he was supposed to have a spotlight panel, but that got canceled.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yep. Yep. What an interesting, I mean, Whedon's career has become fascinating. I mean, he was the highest of high, you know, the you know, like a Kevin Smith or higher level of like beloved by all of nerddom, right? Like coming off of Buffy, going into the MCU. I mean, he'd done nothing wrong and seemingly could do no wrong. And then there was a, you know, his divorce from his wife and the nasty stuff she said about him and some confirmation about some of that stuff. I don't want to go into what it was now. And now And now this year, you've got the things all coming out about the Justice League movie and things like that. So, I mean, it's fascinating. So,
right. And then you have the people, because then you have people who have that experience, and then you have people like Alan Tudyk and Nathan Fillion who have been like saying like how great he was on set and stuff. So it's like maybe it's just, you know, different set, different atmospheres or relationships, but yeah, it's very stark differences.
Yeah, I'd like to know what the MCU people would say about him from the Avengers film, because I don't know if I've heard anybody there talk about him, because I think, you know, think about the Justice League situation. Who wouldn't be pissed off all the time if they had to come into that, you know? Right. I'm not even talking about, I know I trashed the movie, but, you know, like, regardless of whether the movie was good, bad, terrible, it doesn't matter, right? Like, you just have to, like, walk in and somehow pick up the pieces of a multi-hundred-dollar production, and you're supposed to salvage it. I'd be in a pretty foul mood every second I was there, you know? So
right. Yeah, it's just and it's interesting you brought up too. You never hear like the MCU guys say anything about him, and is that a good thing or is that a bad thing that he never gets brought up? You know what I mean?
Yep. But I mean, he coattailed. I mean, everybody loved Avengers, you know, I do think I didn't like Ultron a ton the first time I saw it. I've warmed up to it a little bit. It's one of the ones I've watched the least and everything, but I do think it's maybe a little better than I originally thought, you know. And he just seemed to be on fire, although it is weird, right? Because then he was sort of out after that with no real explanation or reason.
He said he was tired of doing it, kind of.
Yeah. Well,
and there was
a lot of studio stuff.
Yeah, and I believe there was a huge Twitter backlash thing that happened after Ultron came out, and people were ripping him pretty hard and stuff. And I think
the Hulk Black Widow stuff.
Yeah. So I'm guessing, you know, just the stress of working on a huge movie like that, and then you come off of it, and then everyone, you know, mostly what you hear from people are all the negative things.
Right.
You know, I think that led a lot to because I think he got off of Twitter for a while at least, and, you know, like basically said, I don't want to do these big studio productions.
But then he got set up to do Batgirl at DC for a while before.
Which seemed perfect. That seemed like just the absolute perfect fit for Whedon. And it seemed like if it happened, it could really have gotten his reputation back on track. But then again, when his wife divorced him and said all those things, you know, I mean, I think that kind of torpedoed Batgirl for sure. True. So.
Yeah, because like a Batgirl of Burnside movie by Whedon, it's like perfect DNA.
I'd still go to that, even given every, you know, so, but yeah.
Right.
Especially, I mean, would you rather see Joss Whedon doing that, even with the Joss Whedon controversies? Or would you want? Do you want more Birds of Prey? Because
you know, I didn't see that one.
Brad, you've been super quiet. Any thoughts on all this stuff?
I mean, I know I've heard some complaints about Jeff Loeb.
Yep. Ooh, yeah, that was
back minorities or the Asian community. Is that what it was?
Yep.
So it's just like everything you enjoy, someone else hates and wants to see burn to the ground. I'm not saying they're probably wrong. You know, maybe the comments about Jeff Loeb is straight, but it's like at a certain point, we're going to find out just everything we enjoy is just covered in the blood of children and be like, I can't enjoy it. Yep,
remember when they made that movie about Abe Lincoln? And like, it's like, come on, just let us have Abe Lincoln. Why do we have to? We don't need to dig into all the horrible psychology of the...
Right.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's your I mean, yeah, we're not going to that road on the show, but yeah, you're the society, the veil of privacy between a creator and the public and then how the role of their art and their creation works versus that veil being completely gone now, you know, and things like that. I mean, it's just super, like, that's a really too much for my brain. Sorry.
Well, I mean, it's happening with Comics Gates and the guy that's making Rorschach is mad. Jay Lee's making a cover for a variant for one of his books.
And Jay Lee had no idea.
Yeah. It's just like,
let's just leave that aside.
Yeah, we're getting farther and farther away from San Diego.
The Whedon thing too. Do you think this stuff that's happening now with Ray Fisher talking about, or what he can say, will have any effect on Whedon? Because, I mean, sure, he may have lost like the Batgirl stuff, maybe over the wife thing, but it didn't really seem to hit him too hard.
I think his fans, it wasn't enough, and it was like a decade ago, so it's not the same as now. You know, my wife and I were talking about this recently, and dang it, well, we were talking about the way you feel about Bill Cosby, let's say, right? Yeah. Versus the way you feel about Michael Jackson, right? And I was speculating that the primary difference, well, I mean, Michael Jackson's dead, right? So that's a factor for sure, right? But I also was saying that we didn't have, I mean, Michael Jackson, we kind of knew this about Michael Jackson, right? Like prior. And we'd already sort of decided at a different, sort of slightly different point in our pop culture what we thought. So for whatever reason, we accept his music, but no one would really watch a Bill Cosby comedy skit anymore, you know? Right. So, you know, I don't know. It's just the culture, you know, the culture evolves, the time changes, and how we interpret those things changes. So I think I think we're really stuck in a quagmire of trying to figure out how that is all going to work, you know, and what the consequences are and the relationship between, you know, again, the creation and the creator and the things we find out about them. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
we're in such a digital society now that when these problems arise, the answer for a lot is people is just to wipe it clean, wipe it from existence, essentially, which is, you know, what happened with Cosby and like Roseanne and stuff. It was retroactively, like, after this happened, then their stuff gets wiped from whatever it's on. You know what I mean?
Yep. Anyway, I don't know. I know we've been on an hour. Anybody have any other specific Comic-Con related things that they liked or want to point out? Or go for it.
I do have one more thing that I forgot to talk about. They talked to Matt Kint, who is doing a comic book co-written or plotted, whatever, with Keanu Reeves, called Berserker, without any vowels in it.
Yeah, no E's.
And I thought in the thing that was interesting was he was talking about when he would have, you know, consultations with Keanu Reeves, and they'd he'd, you know, show him pages of dialogue and whatever, and Keanu Reeves would actually read out the dialogue, which to Matt Kint was like kind of horrifying at first, because he's like, I don't want to hear my words spoken by anybody. No. But because it'll show how he says how bad I am or whatever. But he actually said how it kind of created an interesting creative dynamic and an interesting way to process those, the dialogue and whatnot. It added a unique kind of interesting thing to that relationship.
That is interesting. I wonder how, I'd be very curious now to at least read the first issue of that, just to see how that sounds, you know, because a lot of times you read it in your head. And I guess apparently not everybody does this, but, you know, I typically hear a voice of some sort when I read something, you know,
oh, yeah.
whether it's my voice or I put a voice to it. So yeah, that's kind of cool. And I wonder if that's something, you know, when it comes out, if that will, there will be an apparent like, oh wow, yeah, this reads really well.
Yeah, and more if, organic or something.
Yeah. And if so, if that's a process that other creators might adopt, you know, not necessarily right, using Keanu Reeves to read everything.
Kind of.
But
yeah, it was just cool to me as well of how actually involved he is with it too. Because you hear about a lot of stars getting attached to comic stories or whatever, where they might like put an idea or they just kind of like the, or someone writes something and they bring it to them and they approve it. Or like it's clearly just a pitch for a future movie or TV show. But this sounds like he's actually really involved and actually cares about it because he is a comics fan as well.
Yeah, the waiter stole a napkin from William Shatner's table where William Shatner scrawled like four words on it. And then they like sell it and call it William Shatner's Explodions, you know, or something.
Right.
I'd watch that.
Brad, any last thoughts?
My only issue, like, I agree with Josh that this is going to be interesting because of, like, Gen Con and Essen and all the other ones, BlizzCon, all these other conventions that, you know, San Diego kind of shows you, like, this is the grandest it can be. You know, and are people going to the conventions that will not happen in person for the rest of the year? Are we going to have people taking lessons from this? Be like, these things bombed horribly. How do we get engagement? Especially when like everybody should be stuck in their home or, you know, outside getting the Rona. You know, there's not many other choices in certain states. You know, you got entire lockdowns. It's like, why is your attendance, your viewership not higher? Did you completely miss this? Like, and I'll be honest, like, it didn't even click in my head that it was San Diego Comic-Con weekend because just nothing, you know, getting promoted at all. And so I don't know if San Diego failed or just everybody's in such this you know, this depressed state because we can't go outside without fear of potentially dying from the air we breathe, you know, if it's just people have given up caring about these event-ish type things.
I don't even know that, well, we're all at this point afraid of instant death, but, you know, I just read an article about, there's one study now showing that like 78% of COVID survivors have heart damage. Yeah, no, pass. I'm good. I don't need it, you know. So, but yeah.
And I mean, this was like a litmus test, right, for cons to see if it can be done like this. And people will use it to learn what did work, what didn't work, and then hopefully innovate.
Yeah, I mean, Josh, well, Brad, I think that's an excellent point. I think one of the reasons that is so important is that, I mean, like it or not, I know people are hesitant to say this, like, are these events going to happen in 2021? I mean, I'm serious, you know, do you really think the path we're on right now, you know, late July in 2021, 100,000 people are going to go to San Diego Comic-Con? Because I don't think that's very realistic, right? You know, I mean, I realize forecasting year out is just absurd right now. As a business owner, I say I can't even forecast a week from now. You know, I get that. But you know what I'm saying, right? Like, so we need to figure out and get better at what would work. And Josh, you know, my segue to you was going to be, that's the thing, you know, when you stopped by and grabbed a paycheck the other day, that's something I was kicking around to you was like, okay, like we tried this one thing, you know, with virtual game day or whatever. Now we've got these other normal annual events are coming towards us a little bit, right? Like our Nerdy Ween and our Extra Life and Back to the Books and things like that. So like, yeah, how do we recreate those things into something different? It's fascinating, right?
So. Yeah. Well, I think one of the things here is that this isn't ideal, in quotation marks, but there's a lot of potential that we really need to put effort into to actually get something out of. And that's, to me, and you know, I feel kind of bad. I don't mean to just keep harping on San Diego Comic-Con and whatever.
Right.
But just looking at it, trying to look into it and seeing like nothing really of interest, like there's very little there that's really stands out. And it just doesn't feel like anybody tried. And my apologies if there's somebody somewhere who really put their heart and soul into whatever panel they did. God bless you. I missed it, and I don't mean to lump you in and everything. But, you know, I mean, you look at, and maybe kind of an odd example, but what Paradox is doing with the Graphic Novel Club. I mean, you know, we don't have like huge numbers or anything yet. But just this last month here, we had Tom King come in and talk to people about, you know, one of his early graphic novels and you know, comic books in general and all sorts of stuff, I'm sure. I wasn't actually there, so I don't know, maybe you guys just swapped cookie recipes or something and it's a completely different club than I expect, but... You're
pretty much telling it like it was.
Yeah. But that's, you know, that's an example of something that Paradox, it's been something that's kind of been on the radar for years. And now it's finally like, well, screw it. Let's do this. And you put together this graphic novel club, and not to come down on the creators that you had prior to Tom King, because it sounds like they had excellent talks and excellent books and stuff as well. But he's one of the, one of the biggest writers in comics right now. And for Paradox, a small comic shop in Fargo, North Dakota, to say, well, we're in this situation. What can we do to give our customers something? Also, you know, bring in some revenue. Obviously, that's a part of it. But and then to create that and follow through on it and actually get something exciting, you know, it seems like it shouldn't be that difficult for the right. people who put together this giant convention every year to say, okay, here's the situation. This sucks, but we're going to do this. What can we do? And it just kind of was, So I'm very curious to see what happens with Gen Con next weekend. Obviously, I have the one panel I'm really excited about going to. I haven't looked much into the other stuff that's being presented or offered, but I need to do that this week. So if there's any other cool games and things I'm interested in and talks, I want to sign up and check that out. And also, even on on a smaller scale, Anime Fargo coming up, which is a local convention here, they're planning to do things online this year. And I need to chat with those guys and see if we can get them on, because I want to get their take on all of this as well and see what their plans are. Because I don't see online only replacing the in-person experience unless it has to. But
yeah, nothing can do that.
Yeah, that's one of the big things about conventions. Yeah, it's about the news and everything else, but it's the experience of going, and that's why people go. But
well, here's a comparison. So I'm recognized as a premium store by the Wizards Play Network people with me. Not necessarily that I've acted on them yet, but essentially, one of the core of what he said was, imagine you were going to open a game shop right now, like today your shop is going to open, right? Mm-hmm. What is your game plan given COVID-19? And the further point of that was that we can all want what we had before COVID-19, but that is gone. It may come back, mm-hmm. but it is gone. you know, and that it's just, I think that's relevant. I think that everyone is trying to figure out the ramifications of that. And it looks to me a little bit like San Diego got stuck in what used to be rather than the possibility of what is now. And my WPN rep's point was not negative. His point was positive. He was trying to urge us to reinvent the wheel, to come up with it, what it is now, and not just wait for what it used to be to return, or simply try to find a way to make what used to be work somehow, you know, under the situation that we're in. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, it is what it is, you know. And I mean, the last part too, I think San Diego, if Kevin Feige's not coming, there isn't much San Diego Comic-Con can do about that.
True.
You know, they can't replace that. They can't come up with that energy if those guys aren't coming to the convention. Same with DC. If DC Comics is just not at San Diego Comic-Con, there's not much San Diego Comic-Con can do about that, probably, you know.
Right. And that's a good point.
Marvel Studios did skip out on a couple cons in the last few years.
Yep. So, I don't know. There you go. There's my deep thought.
But I agree. It's, you know, struggle breeds innovation. And it's, San Diego has just kind of dealt the bad hand of being the first ones to really kind of throw their hat in the ring. And I still, you know, chalk a lot of it up to the extenuating circumstances of the entertainment industry, or that face the entertainment industry right now, with everything being all jumbled because of it and unsure. So, I mean, that, you know, obviously leads to not as cool news, you know.
I mean, the earliest conventions in 2021 are Emerald City Comic Con, and then I think the Toronto Comic Con, I don't know what it's called. It's just called the Toronto Comic Con. I mean, those are not going to happen. I mean, come on, those are not, you know, there's some vaccines going into third stage trials. There's some other positivity. I understand all that. But the earliest, I think, that we're looking at some kind of return to life, so to speak, well, we're all alive, but is April or May, probably, once winter and all those things start to turn and head into next summer. Or probably one of two things happens. We have a vaccine that gets widely used enough to become effective, or we're kind of like, in some ways we're in this phase now. We're in a live with it phase at this point, right? We've got sports coming back. You know, we have a lot of things going on. We have a lot of adaptations. We're going to restaurants. Well, I'm not, but you know, but these things are happening. And so if there isn't an effective vaccine by next summer, I mean, I think people are sort of just going to be living with it, and that's right. That, you know, so maybe those things will be there, but even so, you know, I can't see putting 100,000 people at a convention or something like that without a widely effective vaccine. I mean, that just doesn't seem like something that we will do. So,
I don't think a lot of creators would show up even.
No. I mean, look at the football players who are opting out of the season. You know, they've got, you know, six players on the New England Patriots alone have opted out of the season, you know, and things like that. So it's you know, it's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, we'll obviously we'll see how things go.
One last thing.
Yeah.
Now, this fall usually is when New York Comic Con happens. Do you think that they Comic Con International tries this again and tries a different format with it, or do they just skip it?
It will be very interesting if we had any announcements. I was actually, while I was talking, it's funny, I was thinking of New York Comic Con and wondering if we knew of any plan there.
Yeah,
because that's the more. Because of the cons, that's the more pure comic convention.
Yep.
compared to San Diego. So, like, I could see them doing a much more creator panel oriented thing. Like, I could actually see that happening. Whereas, like, maybe that's what happened to San Diego. San Diego has become so much of the major entertainment hub that the problem is they just didn't get any. And so they created this online format, and then none of the major entertainment sources showed up.
Exactly. Then, it was nerd crowd, not the everybody crowd.
Yeah, and so then they were left like, okay, well, so. It's like promotions at the shop. I was talking to Josh about this too, where we're in a really weird spot. We're trying to figure out what a promotion is. If you aren't coming out and shopping because you don't think it's safe, I mean, I could put my merchandise all on sale for 50% off. That doesn't have anything. That's like, it's like two different things, right? It's like, I'm not coming out because it's not safe. Oh, I'm having a sale. I mean, there's no, right. You know, I didn't address the need that they're stating. I ignored the need that they're stating and just made up something else, you know?
Yeah. So I tried to get them to
supplanted it.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, well, here's a bribe. Well, no, we don't want a bribe. That's not why we're not coming, you know? I mean, so yeah, So how do you promote into a situation like that? Like, we have our, like, Back to the Books is one of our best events every year. You know, it's a 5-day event. Each day targets a different type of thing we do in the store. It's backed up by actual events taking place. And we hand out coupons for a month leading up and all that stuff. And it's like, well, I don't really want to hand out a coupon now that they take home. They have to get it from me, take it home, bring it back. Right. Like, and yep. Then we have to touch it again. So that's not a way you want to do things right now. Right. And then And then I don't want a bunch of people on each specific day. Like last year, we kicked it off with Free Comic Book Day 2, and it was a huge success. I say this carefully. We don't want that. You know, I mean, we want the huge success, but we don't want that many people. You know, all in one shot. And, you know, we can't even have Free Comic Book Day 2 this year since we haven't even had Free Comic Book Day 1. But, and so how do you reinvent that? Do you go to like a week long thing for each one of those things? I just don't think that's very effective, you know, because I think what Back to the Books is, you know, like I think I already can see that if I turned it into a week long thing all of September where each we can say, oh, this is graphic novel week and this is board game week instead of day. I don't think that's going to be very effective. You know, it's not as energetic and I have to be there on Wednesday in order to get the free comics. You know, I have to be there on Thursday to get free graphic novels, right? Like, oh, it's a week. Well, I can stop by anytime. You know what I mean? It's just it's not the same thing. And it doesn't address the reason they're not coming. So I don't know. I mean, I'm in that same boat. Do I just throw it out the window for the year? Do I try to revise it for now? And last thing, sorry, I know we're over. Last thing on that too, you know, like Free Comic Book Summer, it's not working at all. I mean, nobody cares, you know?
Right,
like,
exactly. I mean, it's not an event. It's just a thing that's happening.
Well, here's 3 or 4 free comics this week. Great. You know, like it just doesn't resonate. Yeah, we've been on KVRR, we've been in the newspaper, we have every Facebook banner we have has the thing. I mean, people can see the dang thing, and they don't give a crap, you know? I don't blame them. I don't mean that. Anyone who thinks I'm blaming you for not caring, that's not what I mean, you know? I mean, it's that reinvention. It's just not working. If you're not going to go out of your house, me giving you free comics is not what you're looking for.
Right.
So
it's anyway, like I'm trying to lure you into my den of germs.
Yeah. So, all right. That's all I got.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and wrap it up then. Our big thanks to Eric Broadshow and Brad Meixner for joining us to chat a bit about SDCC and the state of conventions these days. We hope you guys enjoyed this podcast, and we appreciate you tuning in, whether you joined us live or listened to it later on the website. That website, in case you're wondering, is paradoxcnc.com, and we hope that you'll go there to check out all the great products and blog posts we have. I was going to say events, but there really aren't a lot of those right at the moment. Hopefully more coming soon. We do have some cool stuff going on. We talked a little bit about the Graphic Novel Club. There's plenty of information about that, so we hope you'll go and check that out. It's a chance to read some really great graphic novels and talk with creators, ask questions, and get some good insights into all manner of comic books and storytelling. So that's awesome. Let's see. We, of course, have our presence on Facebook, the Paradox Comics and Cards page on there, as well as a number of groups tailored to your interests. So we have things for Magic the Gathering, comic books, board games, all sorts of good stuff. So find us there, at ParadoxCNC on Twitter, ParadoxCNC on Instagram, and I think that about covers it. So thanks again, everybody, for tuning in, and we will see you on the next DoxCast.
This was a DoxCast. Hope you think it rocks, cast. Oh, look at the clocks, cast. Until next time.